Extreme Makeover Church Edition. So basically, to start it off, we're going to try to guess which member of Extreme Makeover you think Steele and I are. No, we're not. Basically, we're going to overhaul this church, the Downtown Rock Saturday Night Small Group. So for the next 8 weeks, Steele and I want to explain to you guys what we're doing, why we're doing it, what, Lord willing, is going to happen in these small groups and house churches, and how you can be involved if you choose to do so. Tonight's message was given a month ago on a Wednesday night at our meeting, and if you're in that room, this is a rerun tonight. But a lot of those people are not here, they're at a wedding. But if you are here and you were that night, I've added some really neat PowerPoint. If you have any questions about house churches, the next 8 weeks, it's all we're going to talk about. You talk to me, talk to Steele, call us, or email us. Steele and my email and phone numbers are in the program. If you want to have any questions, get a hold of us. If you're new at The Rock tonight, if you're checking it out for the first time, this message is not necessarily directed at you. You're welcome to listen in, but you are totally welcome to get involved. So I'm going to tell you guys a story to start. When was Provo planted? Last year. September 21st, here's my first really neat slide. Provo was planted September 21st, 2007. There's some Provoites right there. That was a significant event for the Downtown Rock, because up until that point, Bill and Mac and Steele and I all lived in Salt Lake County, and we were responsible for both churches, and obviously Bill and Mac were focused more in Sandy and Steele and I downtown. But when Mac moved to Provo to plant that church, that gave Bill sole responsibility for Sandy, and that gave Steele and I sole responsibility for downtown. Now, obviously, the four of us are a team, and we're united, and we work together, but each pastor has a local focus. Planting a church in another county changes how you operate as a church. We're one church in terms of our music, our shared teaching responsibility, our finances, our staff, but Mac moving to Provo caused this change because it's hard to focus and centralize as a church when one of your churches is an hour south. So, we had this pastor staff overnighter last September, if you want to write down the date, September 23rd, 2 days after Provo kicked off. We were talking about win, build, and send, which is the Rock's mission statement. The Rock's mission statement is win the loss, build the believer, and send the sanctified. So we're sitting in this room discussing win, build, and send for our church, but it was hard. And so I think Bill suggested, he said, you know, why don't we break down by location? So Bill and Michael went in one room to discuss win, build, and send. Mac went by himself into another room. Hopefully he did not talk to himself. And Tony, Steele, Derek, and I went into a different room, and we talked about win, build, and send. How would we customize our mission statement to the downtown church? And so the main thing that came out of that staff overnighter was that the Saturday night deacons would take more responsibility for win, build, and send. But Steele and I ran into a snag because we would meet with the different deacon teams to discuss different things that we were trying to tweak about our church. But for example, service. We would meet with the deacons that were trying to add more service to our church. But it kept looking like additional programs. Now on paper, everybody goes, oh yeah, our church should serve more. But when you think about people's existing commitments, it's hard to get excited about adding another program to people's schedules. So Steele and I met with all the different deacons, and after each meeting, the deacons would leave, and Steele and I would sit there, and we'd start to talk, and this idea started to form. Basically, the idea was that everything the Saturday night church does outside of this service goes into house churches. You don't tell one of our leaders like Derek or Zach, who may be leading at the next level, who maybe are teaching financial peace, who serve on a Saturday night, who may be in a band, who may be married, who may have a career, oh yeah, we need you to add a full-time ministry. We want you to head up at church. Everything had to go into house churches and small groups. It all has to become grassroots. The conclusion was that everything our church does outside of this meeting that you're sitting in right now goes into house churches. Discipleship, accountability, leadership development, outreach, service, teaching, men's and women's stuff, worship, all that stuff goes into house churches. So instead of adding more service to our church's calendar, it's all of our small groups and all of our house churches are going to serve more. And Steele and I got very excited about it because we both saw it for what it was. It was a fundamental shift in the way we do small groups. So then, I believe God led Mark Darling to write a book, which I'll show to you now. Right here. I believe God led Mark Darling, he's a pastor in our movement in Minneapolis. He started the first original rock church about 10 years ago. In this book, he talked about house churches. He talked about how he had started this model about 2 years ago and how it had revolutionized his church. And Steele and I are reading this book and we called each other up and we're like, this is it. This is what we've been sensing in terms of the direction the Saturday night church has to go. So we had these two multi-hour conversations with Mark on the phone. And Mark was a hard person to have a phone conversation with because you'd say, Mark, tell me about this. And then he would just go off for 15, 20 minutes. And you'd be taking notes as fast as you could. And you think, Mark, you got to speed these up, buddy. I got 20 more questions. So then in May of this year, we had our next pastor, staff, deacon overnighter. Steele and I passed out the booklet to all the Saturday night deacons, and they read it. And all the Saturday night deacons were very excited about it. So then at the end of May of this year, Bill and Mac and Steele and I met for 4 hours to discuss the future of small groups at our church. Because you guys, we have a plurality in this church. We're a team. We're under each other's authority. It doesn't mean anything if Steele and I get all excited about an idea if Bill and Mac are not in agreement with us. So for 4 hours, we talked and prayed. And my prayer going into that meeting had been that Bill and Mac would say, Josh and Steele, you're released to do what you want to do with the small groups on Saturday night. And those exact words were said, if I remember right. The reason the four pastors had to come to an agreement was because Steele and I were proposing a completely different way of doing small groups downtown. No more free market small groups, a totally different way of doing leadership development, changing mission trips and service fundamentally. Everything outside of the Saturday night service. So when we were released, Steele and I started to prepare and dream. Let me show you my red book. You probably haven't noticed, but for the last 6 months, every time I come to church, I bring the red book with me, and I'm sitting in the back taking notes, writing ideas down, because Steele and I have been praying and dreaming and planning and brainstorming and talking to a number of the leaders here. And sometimes Steele and I would grab lunch and he'd get all fired up Steele style and he'd start ranting on something and I'm just taking notes the whole time. So that was May 27th, if you'd like to write down that date of this year. So for the last 6 months, Steele and I have been systematically redesigning the entire Saturday night small group. And at first, Steele and I kind of got on the same page. And then Steele and I talked to the house church leaders. And then we talked to the small group leaders. And then we've been teaching our core on Wednesday night for the last month or so. And now we're presenting it to you guys tonight. So that's the story of how we got here. So let's go big picture for a second. What does it say on our website? It says a lot of stuff. It says, The Rock is a revolution in church. We are a group of people working together in unity in order to reach the world for Jesus Christ. And again, what's our mission statement? Say it, win the lost, build the believer, and send the sanctified. And then recently with Roots, we've talked about 20 services by the year 2020. So the mission statement, win the lost, build the believer, and send the sanctified. We want to reach the world, and Utah is a great place to start because we have less evangelical Christians than most of the world does. So how good are we at this location at win, build, and send? I think by the grace of God, the downtown church is fairly effective at winning the lost. Supposedly, there's 9 new families that come to our churches, all 3 locations every weekend, which is crazy. People are getting saved and baptized every month in our church. In the past 2 months, out of this downtown location, 7 people have decided to become Christians, which is awesome. And that tells me that you guys are inviting your friends and you're bringing your friends and they're becoming Christians. So well done. This building, the bands, the music, the whole atmosphere of this place is designed to be attractive to people that are not Christians. So tons of people come each Saturday. I don't know who most of you are, but welcome. There are a lot of churches all over our country that maybe see 1 new family a month, not 9 new families every weekend. That's just God blessing our church here. So win the lost. We always want to see more saved. And Lord willing, God is going to use these house churches to see more people saved. But we must be thankful God is blessing in terms of new people coming and people getting saved. So that brings us to the next two items on our mission statement: build the believer and send the sanctified. In other words, after these people get saved, we want to see them mature in their faith. And then ultimately, we want to see teams go plant churches all over the valley, all over the state, and all over the world. If we're being honest, though, I think this church comes to a screeching halt when we hit build the believer and send the sanctified. I think we need to grow as a church in maturing believers. Jesus talked about this in Matthew. There we go. Matthew 28:19. Go make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit, and teaching them to obey everything I've commanded you. So Jesus said, make disciples, i.e. build the believers up in their faith. And then Jesus said in Acts 1:8, you will receive power when the Holy Spirit comes on you, and you will be my witnesses in Jerusalem and all of Judea and Samaria and to the ends of the earth. Jesus said we need to, once we make disciples, we got to send people out to plant churches. But Winston Churchill said, however beautiful the strategy, you should occasionally look at the results. So that's what Steele and I have been doing for the last year. We say we want to win the lost, build the believer, and send the sanctified, but how effective are we? What are the results? How good are we at building the believer? How can we make disciples more effectively? Currently, we do not really have a framework for making disciples here. What do you do when someone becomes a Christian? What if somebody shows up, they've moved to town, and they're new, and they want to get plugged in and grow in their faith? What do you do with them? Someone goes back to connections, and they become a Christian. Where do we direct them? Our church is honestly like a hurricane of people. And Steele and I want to build a hurricane shelter. We want to grab someone and pull them inside the shelter. Now, God's Spirit is bigger than our lack of organization, and people are growing in their faith, but Steele and I, as your pastors, are burdened by the fact that we want to see more disciples coming out of this location. And I think that lack of structure is hurting our church. Let's look at the numbers. I'm a numbers guy. In the month of October, so last month, we had 340 people in this church on a Saturday night. So let's look at three indicators of maturity. I believe a mature Christian would do many things, but they would do these three things in particular. They would be involved in community, they would be serving at church, and they would be giving financially. Those are three. So this fall, we canceled every single small group on Saturday night except for the Next Level meeting that meets Wednesday at 7 right here, and you're welcome to join us. And over that same four-week period that we had 340 people here, we had 80 people at that meeting, which is 24%. Serving at church, our hardworking secretary Lisa said there's about 120 people who serve at this church. So 120 out of 340 is 35%. But I would argue that being on the serving schedule is a far cry from actually showing up and serving. Because I can personally vouch for the fact that Billy Johnson seems to clean every single week after church. He's the cleaning coordinator, and I'm guessing that people don't show up, so he covers for it. 35 is a little high, but we'll run with it. Giving, I asked our financial guru, Michael Anderson, give me a ballpark number, Michael. How many people on Saturday night faithfully give month to month? And he said about 78. So that's 23%. So we have 24, 35, and 23% of our church that are in small group serving and giving financially. So that means that 23 to 35% of our church may be more mature in their faith. And I'm not saying that if you're not in community, you're not serving, you're not giving, you're immature, but I'm not saying that either. So that's the state of the union right now, and Steele and I are not content with that. And our goal is that as we get better at building the believer, these numbers will improve. We'll have more people in community, more people giving, and more people serving. You might be thinking, I'm not even a Christian, Josh. I'm not talking to you. You might be thinking, I just moved here. I'm figuring things out. I'm not talking to you either. You might be thinking, I just became a Christian. I'm just figuring this out. I'm not talking to you either. New people, visitors, people checking out Christianity, you are welcome here for the rest of time. There's all the grace in the world at the Rock. But Steele and I want to see our church get better at making disciples, seeing Christians mature in their faith. Basically, we want to take the core of our church and turn it up till it's like 2,000 degrees. And we start making disciples. We want these house churches to become these super hot cores that do amazing things for God. We need to get radical with making disciples. And our tool is house churches. Let me be really blunt with you. Steele and I need to focus. 340 people at church, Steele and I need to focus in on the core and really start applying our energies there. Every single one of you is invited to join our core. The core needs our help. You're like, tell us about the stinking house churches. Here we go. I'd like to talk about the who, the what, the where, the when, and the how of house churches. Okay. A lot of repetitiveness in our announcements and my message. January 21st, 2009 is when we're going to kick off house churches, which is also when the Lost season premiere kicks off. Hence this slide. That right there is a VCR DVR. So I have a word from the Lord for you all. I will not sacrifice to the Lord my God offerings that cost me nothing. So buy a DVR, record Lost, go to house church, watch it after. So house churches are going to start on January 21st, 2009. And this is going to be the monthly calendar for our church. We're going to use February since it's our first full month. So we've got the Saturday night service here. We've got house church on the first and the third Wednesday. We've got small group on the second and fourth Wednesday. We have a pastor house church leader meeting and a house church small group leader meeting. So I want to briefly talk about all those meetings. So the first meeting is going to be that first Monday, the second. Steele and I, Cole, Tim, Derek, Ryan, and Zach, the seven house church leaders, are going to meet to talk and pray and plan. Here are the house church leaders. So there's three house churches. Ryan and Steele are going to lead the first house church. Cole, myself, and Tim are going to lead the second house church. And Zach and Derek are going to lead the third house church. So the first Monday of every month, the seven of us are going to get together. We're going to pray. We're going to talk. We're going to plan. How are you doing? How's your house church? How are your small group? How are your people? We're going to encourage each other. We're going to discuss the state of the church. It's going to be an amazing thing to have Ryan and Cole and Tim and Zach and Derek taking greater responsibility for this body. Steele and I are the pastors. We answer to Jesus. The blood's on our head. But I think it's going to add incredible strength to get these other five men in sort of an under-shepherd role. We actually had our first meeting like this last month. The seven of us got together. We prayed. We talked about our lives. We talked about the whole plan for the church. Guys were opening up about things that were going on. We're praying for each other. It was amazing. I loved it. I'm like a house church nerd now. And you geek out about stuff like that. So back to the calendar. So then on the 4th and the 18th, the 1st and the 3rd Wednesday, that will be the house church night. There's going to be three house churches. They're going to be meeting on the same night at the same time in three different locations. They're going to be covering the same material week to week. And right now, remember, there's 80 people in our small group core. If you take 80 and divide it by 3, that's 27. So using our current numbers, we're going to have three house churches of 27 people meeting on the 1st and the 3rd Wednesday. These meetings are going to include people hanging out, worship, communion. One of the leaders is going to give a short message. Then we're going to break into groups for discussion and prayer. Once a month, there's probably going to be a meal in the house church meeting. There's going to be family and community and spirituality, and Lord willing, it's going to be amazing. So then on the 16th, there's going to be three different leader meetings. This is where the whole coaching thing comes in. Derek and Zach are going to meet with their small group leaders. Ryan and Steele are going to meet with theirs, and Cole, Tim, and I are going to meet with our small group leaders. And again, these meetings are going to be, how are you doing? How's your small group? How are your people? How can we pray for and support each other? There's going to be a lot of coaching and instruction and teaching at these meetings. Let me show you these leadership teams real fast. You can't read that, probably. You can. Derek and Zach are going to be leading Ben and Cindy's small group. Tony and Shannon are leading a small group, and Tim and Faith. So the top two names are the house church leaders, and then Ben and Cindy, Tony and Shannon, and Tim and Faith are the three small groups that are in that house church. Myself, Cole, and Tim are leading the next one. Billy and Ashley are leading one. Paul and Becky, Brian and Paige, there's three small groups there. And then Steele and Ryan again, with Dan and Ashley leading a small group, Dax and Lauren leading a small group, and Paul and Kristen leading a small group. I think these leader meetings are going to be some of the most critical meetings that happen in our church's calendar. And that's why I'm telling you about them. You're like, I'm not a leader, I don't care. You need to know that the leaders are going to be praying and planning and coaching and discipling and working very actively to make sure these groups are led well. And you know, these meetings have already started. The house church leaders are having the small group leaders over. They're getting to know each other. They're talking about their lives and their marriage and their work. And again, I'm a house church geek, but it brings a tear to my eye when I get an update from Derek on a meal he had with Tony or something. I would like you guys to pray for these house church and small group leaders. They've agreed to a very serious responsibility. Steele and I prayed and thought through what we wanted the house church leaders to commit to. We gave them a list. They took a month and they prayed and they got counsel and they asked a bunch of questions and they agreed to do it. The small group leaders, we did the same thing. They really counted the cost. It was very encouraging to Steele and I. I want to run on a tangent for a minute. You all remember the way we've done small groups the last 5 years? It's the free market way. Basically, if you want to lead a small group, you fill out an application, you go to an orientation, and you're a small group leader. The advantage of this is that there's usually a lot of opportunity for people to be in a small group. There's a lot of carrying capacity. That's actually why we went that way 5 years ago. Bill was leading the church, and all six of his small groups, they called them fellowship teams back in the day. I know. They were all full. So a new person would show up at church, and Bill would say, I'm sorry, all the fellowship teams are full. There's no room for you in small group. So the advantage of the free market system is you get more small groups out there, so there's more capacity for people to be in small group. The weakness of this model is that it doesn't produce disciples as well, and there can be limited pastoral oversight and care. But in the house church world, all this changes. Steele and I really thought through who we wanted to lead the house churches and who we wanted to lead the small groups. We know them. We know their lives. We gave them a list of things to pray about, and they committed to it. You might be thinking, I should have been one of those small group leaders or house church leaders. Why didn't they ask me? You might be thinking. All I have to say to you is get in a house church, get in a small group, be faithful, be committed, and God will raise you up as a leader in His time. Okay, so back to the calendar. So on the 11th and the 25th, we're going to break those three house churches of 27 into three small groups each, so a total of 9 small groups, using our current average of 80, 27 times 3, 9 times what? 9. Math is hard. Okay, so there's going to be 9 small groups of 9. I know numbers are hard. I'm good with numbers. I'm clearly not a graphics guy. Let me show you this slide I made up. So there's 340 people here right now. 80 of you are part of our core. That top circle is our core, 80. We're going to break that 80 down into three house churches of 27. So each one of those middle circles is about 27 people. And then we're going to break each one of those house churches down into small groups, about 9. So there's core, 3, 27, and 9, 9. So if you choose to be a part of this, you would be part of a house church that meets on the first and the third Wednesday, and you'd be part of a small group that meets on the second and the fourth Wednesday. What are the small groups going to look like? Again, there's going to be people hanging out. There's going to be a discussion, which may be topical or may be a Bible study. There's going to be a lot of questions. How can we apply God's word to our life? Because we want to see people built up in their faith. There's going to be a lot of application of the word, a lot of quiet time thoughts, a lot of prayer, a lot of accountability. How are you really doing? And these groups are going to be amazing. And Lord willing, they're going to honor God, create real Christian community, make disciples, and share the gospel. So that's it. This service stays the same, but I think there's going to be some profound changes to this meeting
that happen behind the scenes. So that's the overview of our calendar. There's two leader meetings, there's two house church meetings, and there's two small group meetings. And Lord willing, this is going to fundamentally change and grow our church. Still, my prayer is that we have a core in our church that's burning at 2,000 degrees. Two more calendar items. Compassion projects. We're going to do a fundamental change here. Instead of saying, oh, guys, December, our compassion project is, we're going to go down and feed this group over here, or something like that. Instead of that, all of the service projects that we would do go into house churches and they go into small groups. These small groups and house churches will serve each other and they'll serve people outside. And basically, we want service to become part of the DNA of these groups. Now, if you have a church of 340 people and you hear that such and such sister in the church has a need, let's say she has to move or something, you go, there's 339 people. Someone will go help her. I'm not going. But if you are in a room with 27 people and Derek looks around and says, hey, guys, this girl in our small group is moving. This woman in our church needs us to help her with her house. I guarantee that she will get more service and love and support from 27 people that Derek can look at versus 340 people that go, somebody else will take care of her. For example, Steele and Kim are going to have a baby this spring. So up till this point, Betty Provold has graciously organized meals for the moms when they have babies in our church. But in the new house church world, that all changes. So instead of being a church-wide deal, the house church is going to take care of Steele and Kim. That means, men and women, you may be responsible, if you're in Steele and Ryan's house church, to cook a meal for them. And I know that is scary for some of you men. So you have 4 months, you can get a recipe, and you can start cooking it every couple weeks till you get that recipe dialed in. The second thing that will change is mission trips. Another fundamental change here. Last summer, all three of our locations had people come from all three. They formed a team. They got to know each other. They went to Europe for a couple weeks, and it was an amazing trip, and God blessed them. But again, out of 340 people, we maybe have 15 or 20 on a Saturday night that decide to go on a mission trip. But now, all three house churches are responsible for planning and organizing their own mission trip. So instead of having a random group of people that spend months getting to know each other and then going on a mission trip, these same 27 people that you pray with and eat meals with and you're in communion with and you're in small groups with and you're studying the Bible with, you guys are going to plan and organize a mission trip once a year. So instead of one mission trip coming out of all three locations, we're going to, Lord willing, have three amazing mission trips come out of just the downtown location. This is a shift from church-wide to house church. So instead of Mac organizing a trip that pulls people from all three, there's going to be three mission trips coming out of the three house churches. We probably won't even advertise mission trips here anymore. You'd be like, do you do mission trips? Oh, yeah, we do three a year. Lord willing, in a couple years, four and five and six, and we're sending teams out on mission trips all the time, but it's all underground. It's all happening and getting organized and planned in the house churches and small groups. You might be asking, what happened to that every man's Monday or ladies' night? It doesn't apply to us anymore on downtown. Provo is doing their own leadership development. Sandy's doing their own leadership development, and we're going to do our own leadership development here downtown. It's obviously going to be through those leader meetings on the first and the third Monday, but there is going to be a ton of leadership development happening in the house churches and in the small groups. Because it's going to be like, hey, will you lead worship this week? Hey, will you lead communion this week? Hey, man, would you be willing to go help this person? Would you be willing to meet with that person? There's going to be a ton of leadership development happening in the house churches and small groups. Hopefully you see the structure. There's two pastors, there's seven house church leaders, there's 18 small group leaders, there's 40 or 50 people in the core of these groups. But in order for this to work, a couple things need to happen. First of all, the Jethro principle. Who is Jethro? He was Moses' father-in-law. And I think he was in a TV show. So Jethro comes to visit his son-in-law, and he sees that Moses is meeting with people from like sunup till sundown all day long. He just sits there, and Moses is leading 2 million people approximately. And all day long, people just line up to meet with Moses. So after this, Jethro pulls him aside, chapter 18, verse 17. He says, "What you are doing is not good. You and these people who come to you will only wear yourselves out. The work is too heavy for you. You cannot handle it alone. Listen now to me, and I will give you some advice, and may God be with you. You must be the people's representative before God and bring their disputes to him. Teach them the decrees and the laws and show them the way to live and the duties they are to perform. But select capable men from among all the people, men who fear God, trustworthy men who hate dishonest gain, and appoint them as officials over thousands, hundreds, fifties, and tens. Have them serve as judges for all the people, for the people at all times, but have them bring every difficult case to you, the simple cases they can decide themselves. That will make your load lighter, because they will share it with you. If you do this, and God so commands, you will be able to stand the strain, and all these people will go home satisfied." So that's what we're trying to do with this thing, this house church thing. We want to lead and shepherd our church more effectively. But in order for that to work, you guys need to understand authority. You all have read the story in the Gospels when Jesus praises the Roman centurion. What did he praise him for? His faith. And what did he just talk about in the preceding verses? Authority. He's like, "I understand authority, Jesus. You can tell my servant to be healed and he'll be healed. I'm a man under authority. I have a man under me. I understand, Jesus, you are a man with authority." It takes faith to submit yourself to a spiritual authority. And authority is constantly abused in our world and especially in religious circles. So we kind of pop up our defensive spikes if somebody says the word authority to us. But it is important to Christian growth and maturity, but too many of you answer to no one. This is how you think. You go, there's me, there's Jesus, me, and I may get help from a pastor occasionally if I decide it's a big enough deal. And that's not biblical. Men and women, we all need to be people under spiritual authority. You need to look at your house church and small group leaders as spiritual authorities in your life. It does not mean becoming a robot that cannot make decisions without you pull out your cell phone. "Hey, small group leader, I'm thinking about ordering Little Caesar's pizza." No. I'm talking about being, though, a man or a woman who gets counsel and input and guidance from your small group and your house church leader. Steele and I are your pastors. We love you guys, and we're here to support you. We'll meet with anyone, but Steele and I are going to start beating the drum like, boom, 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 boom. Are you in a house church? Boom, boom, boom. Small group? And then you'll come back and go, I am. We'll be like, boom, boom, boom. Have you talked to your small group leader about this? Boom, boom, boom. Have you talked to your house church leader about this? It's the Jethro principle. It's being under authority. It's very biblical. Let's say, for example, you choose to be a part of this and you end up being on Ben and Cindy's small group. Our prayer is that men, you go to Ben and get counsel. You talk to Ben about life, and women, you go to Cindy. If something is a huge deal and Ben and Cindy want help, they call up their house church leaders, Derek and Zach, and they get input on the situation. Let's say Derek and Zach go, "Man, we need Josh and Steele. We'll be happy to help out." Let's say Steele and I are like, "Whoa, we need the guys that know more than us. We'll call up Bill and Mac." There's going to be a coaching, shepherding, discipling thing happening in these groups that's missing right now in our church. But in order for this to happen, you need to respect your small group and house church leaders. They're good men and women. They're leaders in our church. They're going to sin. They're going to do stupid things, and I promise you they will do that. You need to go correct them. But you cannot walk around thinking, "I've been saved longer than him. Why is he a leader? I've been going to this church longer than her. Why is she a leader?" If you gossip or slander or have a critical spirit about these leaders, that will destroy this, and Steele and I will not tolerate that. One thing that is super encouraging to me is that the house church leaders and small group leaders are already, like I said, grabbing meals, hanging out, praying together. They're getting into each other's lives. They're being intentional with their relationships. They're already setting a tremendous example. There should be a shift in your thinking if you see what I'm talking about. You meet someone new at church and you encourage them to get involved in a house church or a small group. You meet someone new that's struggling with something. Instead of going, have you talked to your house church or your small group leader about this? Instead of just hanging out with random people at church, you start to focus your relationships on your house church and your small group circle. These meetings are going to start really early, probably at 6:30. You're like, 6:30? That's really early. Two reasons. One, because we're going to have meals once a month in these groups, and nobody wants to eat dinner at 7:30 at night. And two, we're going to bring all the little children to these meetings. We've been bringing the kids to our Wednesday night meeting. Do you know what one of my first memories of my entire life was? My dad and mom planted a church in Gainesville, Florida when I was like 5 or 6 years old. Four or five, or two, maybe even three. I was a wee child. I remember when I was 4 or 5, I remember sitting in this guy's house. I can't tell you where it was. I can't tell you whose house it was. But there's about 20 or 30 people in the room. There'd be a guy playing a guitar, singing hippie Jesus songs. And I'm just sitting there just on the wall listening. And then my dad would get up and he'd give some sort of message to this group of people. And then these group of people would break into groups and they'd pray and talk about it. As a 4 or 5, 6-year-old kid, that was my church experience, was watching. We had a church service, but my memory that I remember is sitting and watching people studying the Word, being taught in worship and prayer. And it was a profound thing that the people I saw growing up loved Jesus, they cared about God, they cared about prayer, they cared about community, they were out sharing the gospel. If you choose to be a part of this, you will be impacting the little children that are there at the house church. So there's a very high bar for you. On the flip side, there's a very high bar for the parents, because it is a feat of incredible wonder in our day, this day and age, to have a child sit quietly for an hour. It's like, oh my goodness, is he sedated? Now, when we have the meeting going on, there's probably going to be a cry room for babies. But if you as a parent have a child who can sit quietly once a week for 2 hours with no TV, no child care, and they can just sit and listen and be involved, chances are that you are a parent who's loving and training and teaching and winning with your kid. And if you're sitting here thinking, there is no way that my child could sit quietly for an hour and a half in a room while people were studying and praying and teaching and singing, I'm not going to be involved with this, Josh, if that's the commitment. Instead of thinking that, please come talk to me. There are biblical ways of training and instructing your child so that your child can easily sit and listen and be involved. It is not impossible. This intergenerational discipleship will be huge for our church. We're going to have 19-year-old single guys who maybe don't have a job, sitting by 24-year-old newly married guys who are working their tail off because they just got married, sitting by a 30-year-old who's got a career with a couple of kids. There's going to be a breaking of cliques, a broadening of life perspective. There's going to be real-life coaching. Steele's going to go off on this next week, so that's all I'm going to say about that. These groups need to become families with dads and moms, older and younger brothers and sisters. There's going to be people that are not the same age as you, that don't like the same music as you, that are not the same stage of life as you. But if you invest time and energy getting to know these people, you're going to become a family and you're going to see your lives changed. Lord willing, these house churches become stronger and stronger. They become more effective at making disciples. They become these super close-knit families. And I see a day when a house church gets so big, it's two house churches. And then those get so big, those become two house churches. And then I see a day when a house church is sitting around and they all go, you know what? Ogden needs a rock church. And so, okay. Yes, I guess. Yeah, let's throw out some more names. St. George needs a rock church. Tooele? Anyway. This team says we're going to pick some city that needs a church, and we're going to move there, get jobs there, and we're going to plant a church there. Then it's all happening. We're winning the lost, we're building the believers, and we're sending the sanctified. At that point, our mission statement starts to roll. I think if you guys choose to join us, you're going to see an amazing thing happen here. So to wrap this up, I have 3 application points for you, 3 challenges. One, I challenge all of you to get involved. I would challenge you all to pray about becoming part of this, about going all in. Have you ever watched the World Poker thing on TV? I love it. The guys will be sitting there with their cards, and they lift them up, and if they get a good hand, they push all their chips forward, and then I'm like, I'm all in. that's what Steele and I want you to do. If you have any questions, come talk to Steele or I. But then pray, God, do you want me to commit to the Rock Church? Do you want me to commit to this house church thing? And if God leads you to that, then go all in. The pastors are on board, the house church leaders are on board, the small group leaders are on board, and a large chunk of our core is committed to be involved with this. Don't be a skeptic or a critic on the edge. If you're going to be in, be all in. You guys will be welcome here, but we're asking you to be part of the core and to go all in. I trust that God will bless your faith. My second challenge is be flexible. Overhauling a church of 340 people, small groups, is kind of a big deal. It's going to end up taking us about 6 months, start to finish, to get it all rolled out. And we may get 3 months into this and go, whoa, these small groups stink. We got to retool them all. Because our goal is that all three house churches are succeeding, that all nine small groups are rolling. And so Steele and I are going to be, well, this needs to be tweaked, this needs to be tweaked. Oh, we got to move this, got to shift that. We may do things that you don't like. I would ask that you come talk to us about it and just be flexible as we're rolling this out. And the third challenge is raise the bar in your own life. Step your game up, if you will. If you put a person totally on their own, they typically do not pray or study that much. But if you put that person in community with accountability and fellowship, people spur each other on. We spur each other on to pray and to read and to grow in our faith. If you've seen what I'm talking about tonight and what Steele and I are going to talk about the next 8 weeks, we're talking about a major shift in how we do things at this church. The mission trips, the serving, the accountability, the discipleship, the building up of people in their faith. Lord willing, this core is going to start burning at 2,000 degrees. Steele and I, the last 6 months, our motto has been, when in doubt, raise the bar. Steele and I want to raise the bar in our own lives. The bar has been raised in the leaders' lives, and we want the bar to be raised in your life. So I ask that you join us. Let's pray. God, I thank you that you've led us to this point. God, I thank you that you have a plan to see more disciples come out of this church, to see more church plants come out of this church. God, I ask that you would bless people as they pray and think about being involved. I ask, God, you would help us to commit to one church. Help us, Lord, to be men and women that are totally locked into community. God, I pray that these house churches would be places where there is spiritual growth and discipleship and the gospel and your spirit is working in a powerful way. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen.